Brian Kane, welcome to the podcast. I don't know what way to introduce you. There's so much different things. Two-time best-selling author, podcaster, social media star, business. Like, there's so much. I'm just so happy to have you on the podcast. How are you getting on?
Mate, I'm getting on great. It's a pleasure to be on. Sean, I have absolutely loved seeing your growth over the last few months. We were saying it just before we went online. Like, I came across you on TikTok first when I had one of your videos and doing a side-by-side on it. Mm-hmm. And we've been chatting since, you know, back and forth on Instagram, following the stuff. So I absolutely love seeing the growth. Fair play with the podcast, the Instagram growth, the TikTok, the whole lot. So yeah, mate, I am absolutely delighted to be chatting and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I need to thank you as well. So this is episode 50 of the podcast, and I'm sure at some stage I would have started the podcast, but you're actually the one that told me to get Mac together and start the podcast originally. You're like, Sean, you need to start a podcast. So I actually wouldn't be here. I definitely wouldn't be this far in if it wasn't for you. So I want to say thank you for that starting off. I think in this episode, we're gonna talk all things mindset, mostly mindset, and hopefully I feel like you say yourself, it's good to learn from your mistakes, but it's better to learn from other people's mistakes. And I have learned, I'm only at the start of my journey, I'm only 21 years old, but I have learned a massive amount from the likes of you and other people reading books. And I feel like the opportunity to listen to podcasts and learn from other people's mistakes, it's fucking phenomenal. Like, it's absolutely crazy. Like, the amount I've been able to develop my mindset. So what I want viewers to, our listeners, not viewers, to get from this episode is just to learn from other people's mistakes and develop their mindset. It's going to be mostly centered around your book, Rewire Your Mindset, which I got. I've read it. You sent me it for free, firstly, and I read it, and then I listened to it as well. It's amazing. But before we jump into all that, I want you to give the listeners a sort of backstory. Like, who are you? Who is Brian King?
Yeah, super short background because I can go in a lot of different directions when you're talking backstory. But currently, as you mentioned, I'm an online fitness coach, nutritionist, and I spend my kind of day to day is either creating content for online or working with people on programs. And I love what I do. Like, I've got the best job on the planet. But I was a former primary school teacher. So 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago now, 12 years ago, I was a primary school teacher. So for 4 years, I worked as a teacher, and I had a kind of a different coming to the fitness industry than most, in the sense that I didn't go through the, you know, as early as 21. When I was 21, I was still in college doing my postgrad to become a teacher. And when I was about 4 months into my first teaching job, I really didn't like it. Like, first day, in the first hour, Sean, on when I got my first teaching class, a year three class in London in a primary school, I was about an hour in and I was like, oh, I don't want to be doing this. You know, it's where I came up with the analogy of, it felt for me like I had spent years climbing a ladder, but it was up against the wrong wall when I got to the top. And my mom asked me that Christmas when I came home, and I was kind of complaining about my job and saying, look, I don't really like what I'm doing. She was like, what would you do for free? And I was like, well, that's interesting. I was like, what would I do for free? I was like, I've never thought to ask myself that question. And for me, it was the gym. I always said that, you know, if I was cleaning the floors in a gym and I was in that environment, I'd be really happy. So I signed up to a fitness instructor course, and a very long story short, I got hooked from that point onwards. I went and got my level 3 personal training after that. Then I got my strength and conditioning badges, then my sports nutrition. And then over the last, you know, 10 years, I've been working in the fitness industry. For 2 of those years, I was a teacher during the day, personal trainer in London at nighttime. And then 2014, I moved back home. I was at the very start, but the ladder was against the right wall. I moved back into my mom and dad. My sister gave me her old crappy little Toyota Yaris, like one of those that, you know, like, will it start every morning? It was kind of a lucky dip on whether it would start. And I started trying to get a personal training business off the ground from Galway. I went PTing, doing personal training in a local gym, and said, I'd give myself 6 months. I was like, if I'm not working out well as a personal trainer in 6 months, I'll go back teaching. I said 2014, I'll give it until June or July, and then that's it. I'll go back looking for a teaching job in August for September if I fail at this. But it didn't. I was very fortunate when I made that jump back. I got great results with some clients early on and had to build up a waiting list. I actually had to bring on another trainer at that point because I had so many people coming to me from referrals and testimonies, etc. So over the space of a couple of years, I worked as a PT. Then in 2015, my daughter was born, Holly, and I switched into online. I started doing more stuff online, and then in 2016, moved online fully. And over the last, what are we in now, nearly 2022, over the last several years, I've been working primarily online, writing books, creating programs, doing courses, working with people on those programs, and creating content online. So yeah, working as an online fitness coach and nutritionist, helping people with weight loss, fat loss, very similar to what you do, Sean, in terms of the space and the people that I help. And I love it. I do. Like, it's one of the it's such a cliche, but you know this better than anyone. Like, when you love what you do, it feels like you're not working. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how it feels. So yeah, that's been kind of the roller coaster ride over the last 10, 12 years or so.
Yeah, I love that. And one thing I want a lot of people to get from this podcast is a lot of people don't love what they do, but they think that's just the way it is. They think that they just have to do that because they need to earn a wage. So many people are in the security trap. They're all like, well, it's secure, I've got a job. But people don't realize, like, when you're in that security trap, you don't think about it logically. So you thought about it logically. You're like, right, if it doesn't work out, I'll just go back to teaching. I'll go back to doing exactly what I was doing before. But so many people have their ladder up against the wrong wall. And I think a lot of the time they don't even realize it. Can you touch in more on about the ladder against the right of the wrong wall? Because I think a lot of people don't even think about that. They don't even think about where their ladder is. They don't even think they're climbing up this ladder and it's not even the right thing for them. So what like, explain a bit more about what that is, and then how can people actually know if their ladder is against the right or wrong wall?
Yeah, that was me, Sean. Like, I was the person who did the 4-year undergraduate degree. My original degree is in business and marketing, and then I did a postgraduate in London to become a teacher. And I was 5 years in university and college, and I never once questioned, did I really want to be a teacher? I thought that, you know, a lot of my family, loads of cousins, aunties, uncles were all teachers. I was like, well, I'll be a teacher. I'll do that. That, you know, this is something that is kind of expected of me in terms of what people in my family, in my area, and my network do. So I never questioned that. And it wasn't until I got that like bang in the face, metaphorically, when I was in front of 30 kids in a year 3 classroom in London. And I'm like, this isn't what I want to do. I was like, I don't want to be a teacher. Like, you know, and it's a weird one because I didn't hate teaching. I worked as a teacher for nearly 4 years and I didn't hate it, because I think if someone hates their job, because there's a massive spectrum from somebody who's 19, 20, 21, who has less commitments and can't make the jump, to someone who's in their 30s, 40s, and maybe even later, who has those commitments. So the process is going to be different. You know, I think if you're 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, I was 20, just under 26 when I came back, just turned 26 when I came back in 2014. And that's a different process to getting your ladder against the right wall. A lot of that is getting out of your own way. It's you're embarrassed, or ego that's, you know, making you not go after the thing you want because you think you need the money, or you think you need the status, or you think you need this thing over here will make me happy and it'll make me successful. As opposed to checking in and going, well, is actually that what you want to do? I think it's a different story for someone in their 30s and their 40s who has fallen into the rut, kind of the security trap that you said. It's nearly like the golden handcuffs, where you have bills to pay and things to do and probably commitments, maybe a family, maybe a mortgage. So your process is going to be different. You're going to probably start a side hustle if you're in your 30s or your 40s and start making those changes gradually, so that, you know, you don't have to have that jump from one to the other and kind of go from X amount per year where you're paying all your bills to not being able to do that. But if you're in your early 20s, it's just getting clear and clarity and learning from the mistakes of others, like you said, on what do I really want to do? What would I do for free? Like, a great question. I was 22. My mom put that to me. And it's still the best question that I think I've ever put to myself. And I come back to it regularly when I talk to people about their business and helping them with their business. I'm like, well, what would you do for free? Like, and a lot of people will have, you know, fitness in there, they'll have health in there. And following that thread and following the things that you're curious about can put you down the right path. But if you don't question what you're doing every day and check in regularly with how you're feeling about what you're doing, you're not going to know the answer. You're literally going to be like me, who spends 5 years with my eyes figuratively closed, getting to the top of a ladder and be like, well, this isn't what I want to do. Mm-hmm. If you check in and ask yourself, well, am I enjoying this process? You know, Steve Jobs has a very famous quote that he's like, when I look in the mirror for too many days in a row and I'm not happy with what I'm doing, I know something needs to change. And I think it's that process. You're asking yourself, well, am I enjoying what I'm doing? I think it's the same for a diet. It's the same for a training program. It's the same for a business. It's the same for a relationship. And for me, Sean, and you know this from Rewire Your Mindset, the book, I fell into what I call the yeah, it's okay syndrome. It wasn't that I hated teaching, because I think hate and hating something, hating a relationship, hating a job, hating a program, hating a diet, hating the way you look, they're big motivating factors for change. People who hate something generally have a good drive. At some point, they'll get to a sticking point where they're like, fuck this, I'm done. I need to make a change. But the yeah, it's okay syndrome is the thing that holds a lot of people back, because it's easy. You stick with it. It's safe. It's secure. It's the norm. And for me, teaching was the, yeah, it's okay. People would ask me, how are you getting on? And I'd never be like, well, I fucking hate my job. It was, it's okay. It's fine. Like, it's grand. Like, that was my answer. And checking in with that. And I still do this process to this day with my relationship with my daughter, with my partner, with my job, you know, with my loved ones, my family, my friends, my inner circle. I'll check back in and go, cool. Is anyone asking how are those relationships or how are those things? And I'm like, yeah, it's okay. It's grand. I'm like, right. I need to improve that. I need to check in with that, you know? And I think that's a good question to ask yourself at this point. Is there an area in your life, relationship, your fitness journey, your business, whatever it is you want to do, that your answer and reply is, yeah, it's okay. Or if, you know, you're Irish listener, it's grand. Like, as opposed to, yeah, it's fucking amazing. Like, I fucking love what I do. I love the people I'm with. I love my partner. I love my daughter. I have the best relationship. Like, if that's not your answer, you probably need to check in with that a little bit. So getting your ladder up against the right wall is, and making sure you're clear on what it is you want to do, starts with asking the right questions and then just checking in on the process. Am I enjoying this process? Is this really what I want to do? Because it's very difficult, keeping the analogy of the ladder, to climb back down and put it up against another wall. Like, we all follow the path of least resistance, and it's so easy to just keep doing what you're doing. But, you know, it's the old adage, you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you got. Like, you know, you don't actually, if it's not what you want to do, you're better to go back to the basics and back to the start. Like, you know, this with Slimming World and Weight Watchers and people who are on diets, like, you know, people have kind of the sunk cost fallacy. They've spent so much time, energy, money. They've built up their relationships with people in these clubs. They're like, oh, well, I know it works. You know, it just doesn't work for the long term. I'll just go back and do Slimming World or Weight Watchers. I'm like, well, fuck. I'm like, you've been yo-yo dieting for the last 10 years. I'm like, if you're dieting half your adult life, you're doing it wrong. Like, so you, that's hard and it's difficult. But at the end of the day, you know, from your experience working with people, I know from my experience working with people, it's better to climb back down the ladder, get onto a good calorie control plan with foods that you enjoy, that's in alignment with your goals, that you can stick to over the long term, and you'll do considerably better. But I think that's just a, you can put that into any area of life, because when your ladder's up against the right wall and you're consistently checking in with, is this really where I want to be going and what I want to be doing? You just keep rinsing and repeating that. The hard part's climbing back down, but that's only hard in the beginning, because you start to get better with the check-in process as you go along. As I said, I did it with teaching and a job, and it was considerably easier down the line to do it with fitness and do it with business and do it with other areas of my life, my relationships and people that were around me, because it gets easier. Like, you learn skills that transcend into other areas of your life, but it comes with asking those right questions. Like, if your ladder is not against the right wall, the first thing you need to do is get it where you want it to be. Like, whatever that is, whatever that looks like for you. And then checking in regularly with, am I enjoying this? Is this really where I want to be going? And once you're doing that, you can't go too far wrong.
Yeah, it's so dangerous not to hate what you do, because if you don't hate it, then you'll be like, it's fine, I'll just keep doing it. And then that spirals, and it might be all right for the first few months or even the first few years, but eventually you get to a stage where you're looking back and you've done something for 5-10 years and you're like, this isn't what I wanted to do. And it can spiral out of control so quickly. A lot of the time when people are stuck in the security, they're doing something that they're comfortable with. Once they step out to doing something else, they're going to start to doubt themselves a lot. They don't think that that's what they should be doing. They think that's something that other people do. What sort of advice would you give to someone that's constantly talking down themselves, that thinks that they can't do the thing that other people do, that thinks that it's just not for them?
Two trains of thought there. It's a great question, Sean. One is that that's a self-created story, and one that I've lived for sure, that I always had the language of, and my self-doubt, I would never said, wouldn't have talked to you in my early 20s and said, I'm a person who has a lot of doubts. I would have said my confidence was okay, but I had language that expressed it in a very different way. And how it showed up for me was like what you said. My language for self-doubt, and it was just obviously my ego protected me, was like, well, that's something other people do. You know, like, I can't start a business because that's something other people do. I can't do a bodybuilding show. That's something other people do. I can't run a marathon because that's something other people do. So that was the language that I used, but that's a self-created story. Like, you know, it's the old Confucius, those who say they can and those who say they can't are both usually right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the story that you've created yourself. And once I was able to unpack that a little bit, I realized that confidence and self-doubt were like, you know, two sides of a swing or two sides of a pendulum, where the more confidence you have on a topic, the less self-doubt you have, and vice versa. The more self-doubt you have, the less confidence you have. And the inoculation, or the cure, the ability to build more confidence within yourself, eases self-doubt. And this is so relative based on where someone needs confidence with, because some people are really confident in some areas and not so confident in others. Like if you asked me, like I played football for most of my life, with the exception of a few year break when I was bodybuilding. I played football for most of my life and I was very confident in sport because I was good at sport. I wasn't so confident in school because I wasn't good in school, like until I got to university where I was able to pick it up a small bit. So we all have areas of life that we feel confident in, but to enhance that confidence, you have to realize that it comes from competence. And if you're starting something new, you're normally not that competent with it. And as a result, your confidence is low. So the way that you build the confidence is by either setting small goals that map to the end goal you're trying to hit, i.e., if you're trying to lose 100 pounds, you're eating the meals each day, or you're doing the walking step count, or you're doing the gym sessions that help you hit that end goal. You're setting those small steps and you're repeatedly keeping those promises to yourself. That builds confidence. I use the analogy in the book, you know, the Sean, like legs on a confidence table. Mm-hmm. Like if you have picture a table and there's one leg on it, it's very easy to knock that table. Very similar to someone's confidence. Someone who's not confident, you can knock them quite easily. But every time you set a small goal, and you keep it and you do it, you put a small leg on that table. And the more times you do that, that table becomes sturdier. And that's what your confidence is like. So building it over time is just setting those small goals. Like you've seen this, Sean, like people who have physical transformations, and I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of them on my pages and on my social media platforms. And back when I was a one-to-one PT, when I would work with highly obese people, I would have people lose hundreds of pounds. And everyone would always think that, well, they're walking around differently. They've got their shoulders back and their head is up and they feel confident. It's because they lost all that weight. I'm like, yeah, that's a contributing factor, but it's not. It's about who they had to become to lose that weight. I'm like, they had to set small goals. They had to set small step counts that they did every day. They had to eat meals and make conscious food choices that they hadn't done for the previous 10 years. Those small things add up. You know, they went from not being able to do a 200 meter walk on a sprint on a treadmill to being able to walk a kilometer when they're feeling like, well, I can do a kilometer without stopping. Like they're the things that add confidence to people. And when you see somebody with a before and after picture, particularly a weight loss journey, it's not the weight that's gained the confidence. And it's not why they're carrying themselves in a different way, because truth be told, like you can do fucking Slimming World and Weight Watchers. And if you're in a deficit over time, you'll lose a shitload of weight. But you'll rebound it back when you go back eating quote unquote normally. So like how you lose the weight is important. Like the process to which you hit your end result is important, because if you have Jane on one side and Karen on the other side, they both lose 100 pounds and Jane lost it by, you know, just drinking shakes twice a day in a massive calorie deficit. And Karen over here lost it by going into a small caloric deficit, hitting her step count every day, going to the gym maybe three times a week or doing some workouts at home and did it consistently over time. They both have the exact same end result of losing 100 pounds. Who the fuck do you think is going to be way more confident? The person who took a massive quick fix and I'll just do this. I don't like the gym. I don't like the step counts. I don't like food. I'm just going to just eat nothing and drink two shakes. Or the person who had to make those small habitual changes they could stick to over time. You're going to have the same end result, but a completely different process to get there. How you hit your end goal is important. As important as it is getting there, how you hit it is equally as important, especially when you're thinking mindset and when you're talking about the confidence that comes with it, because one is completely sustainable and can be built upon. The other is a deck of cards or a house of cards that's ready to fall at any point. So you don't want to be the person in the latter. You always want to build that confidence over time by making those small, consistent changes. So doing that, regardless of the goal, is always going to be a good step. And realize that the more self-doubt you have in whatever area you're trying to improve and change, building confidence is the way that you minimize that self-doubt. It's just the tactics that you use to get there then that becomes it's important based on your individual context and what you're looking to do, but the method remains the same.
Yeah. One of the things I love that you say is tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. It's great to have long-term goals, whether it be in your career, weight loss, etc. But I think far too many people hone in on them long-term goals, and they're constantly thinking about losing 50 kilos or whatever it happens to be, instead of focusing on what they can do on the daily basis. Like, people overlook the small things, but people don't understand that anyone in the history of the world that's ever achieved anything has just done so by their daily habits. So what advice would you give to people in terms of goal setting? Would you say set big goals and then forget about them, focus on the small habits? Or what way do you work it in terms of goal setting?
There's lots of different ways to kind of potentially answer this question and different strategies that work for most people. But for myself and the people I work with, the approach I take is very straightforward. Now, don't get me wrong, the application and taking the action isn't as straightforward because there's behavioral issues, et cetera, that can hold people back. But it is as straightforward as what's your end goal, getting crystal clear on your end goal. I want to lose 50 pounds. I want to lose 20 pounds. I want to fit into this dress. Now, again, I'm not getting into kind of weight loss, fat loss, and those two different things, but the language a lot of people use, I want to lose 50 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever it is. That's the end goal. Now you break it down into its smallest component parts. What can I do today that's going to help me hit that end goal? That's it. And you do that consistently. Is that looking at your food? Is that hitting your step count? Is that going to the gym? Is that focusing on your sleep? What is it? Is that managing your stress levels and cortisol levels? What are the things you're doing today that's going to help you hit that end goal? In the case of a weight loss goal, like, there's really only one thing you have to do. Like, 99 out of 100 people will lose body fat and reduce body fat by getting into a caloric deficit. Like, they will. Like, you consume your body's, allow your body to tap into its own stored fat by consuming less calories, you'll lose body fat. Everything else will support that. The training, it'll help you burn more calories, potentially increase your metabolic rate if you're doing resistance training. Your sleep will enhance recovery. It'll balance out hormones so you're feeling satiated and full when you should. And all these other things, managing stress, will help. But there's only actually one thing you need to do. So if your goal is to lose weight and lose 50 pounds, you need to be in a deficit over an extended period of time. It doesn't necessarily have to be a deficit every day, but over the space of 7-14 days, you want to be in an overall deficit because that's the one thing you need to do. Everything else then just supports that. So a mistake people can make is they make too many changes too soon. And that's a recipe for failure on the front end. Like, if you've never gone from counting calories or going to the gym or focusing on fitness, and then you go 5 days a week or 6 days a week and you start eating salad for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, being dramatic, but, you know, for effect, that's not going to be sustainable. Like, there's nobody who's going to be able to stick to that. You might do it for, you know, 6 days, maybe 6 weeks, but you're probably going to fall off track after that. So you need to be very, very mindful of how you set it up, because what you do every day determines your results. You know, I think it's a Seneca quote, you know, form good habits and then become a slave to them. Like, that's it. You are what you repeatedly do. So you're building your life in a way when you get clear on your goal that this is the thing I'm looking to do. I'm also big on visualization and putting it somewhere you can see it. You know, I really like those tactics. They help me. They help people I work with, where I'm saying, put that somewhere. Where are you seeing it? For me, it's like, in my office, I can see everything that I'm working towards. And it's, you know, normally in my bedroom where I could see it before I go to bed. So it's just constantly rewiring your current consciousness or your subconsciousness to, this is the thing I'm focusing on. And then you're asking, did I do everything today that would help me hit that end goal? There'll be some days when you don't. That's fine. You try and do better the next day. And if you can do it and all the right things consistently, or some of the right things consistently more often than not, you're going to get to the end goal at some point, you know? And then it's just taking the failure as feedback. Like, there'll be days when you fall off track. It happens. Like, you don't eat the food on plan, or you miss the gym, or you can't get a step count because you're really busy, or, you know, someone's sick and you have to look after them, or whatever it is. It happens. Mm-hmm. You make it up the next day, you reset and you go again. So that's just getting your mindset right. So goal setting is setting the goal and then doing the things consistently every day that help you hit that. And that transcends into all areas. That's fitness, that's business, that's relationship, that's fulfillment, that's anything. Like, you can break down the biggest goals into its smallest component parts, whether it's a 100-mile ultramarathon or 200 pounds you want to lose, or going to a 6 or 7 figure business, whatever it is, you can reverse engineer. You may need to adjust the timeline, of course, based on your starting point. But that's it. It's the same process. And I think once you plug that in and realize that this is a very effective method for whatever it is you're looking to achieve, you can take that same system and plug it into other areas of your life and have the same success elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So now people know what they need to do to achieve their goals. It's going to come down to what they do on a daily basis. But I think a lot of the time, what people overlook when achieving goals is whether it's fitness, business, whatever it happens to be, you're going to come up against opposition. See, once you start doing well for yourself, even if you're just losing weight, if it's something as simple as losing weight, building your business, there's going to be people that oppose that. Once you start doing well, there's going to be people that talk negatively to you. And this is one of the things that I learned from your mistakes and I learned from other people's mistakes, being able to rewire how you think about that negative thought. Like before, when I was younger, if someone spoke negatively, I always would have took offense to it. But then it's about thinking about, why did they actually say that? Why did it affect me? So no matter what you do, like, anyone listening to this, you're going to come up against negativity. There's no way to get around negativity. It's just about how you process it. So what advice would you give to people when it comes to processing negative feedback from others?
That's another great one, Sean. Yeah, like the thing that I struggled with the most, and you definitely adopted this a lot sooner than I did, was people are going to have opinions regardless of what you do. So you may as well do the thing you want. Like, I've gone through a lot of different stages in my life where people had opinions on what I was doing, from should I be a teacher to should I start a business to should I be with this person to should I do this competition or this race or whatever. People will offer opinions regardless of whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, if I'm being honest. Like, if you're clear on what you want to do, your ability to disconnect from the opinions of others will become your ultimate superpower. And the way you do that is by first getting clear on whose opinions does matter, whose opinions do matter. And I think that's important, because I never want to get cast into the fuck everybody, don't listen to anybody, just do you and, you know, run your race. Yes, you can do that, but you can also miss out on some of the golden opportunities to learn as a result of that. And I think it's important to understand where the advice is coming from. And if you're getting advice from somebody who's coming in a very good place, a loved one potentially, or somebody you would potentially switch positions with, it might be worth taking that advice on board, even if it feels critical at the time. And if it does feel critical and you hold on to an opinion that gets thrown at you, you have to ask yourself why. I call them in the book polar bears. So if somebody, example that I've used, a lot of my clients and hopefully listeners here will get the same visualization with it in terms of the picture. But the analogy I use here is, if you're walking down the street on your phone, you're just back from your holidays and you feel really good. You've, you know, lost maybe a little bit of weight because, you know, you've rested and stress was low. You're feeling tanned and you put up a picture of your holiday, and then somebody comments and go, geez, put on a bit of extra holiday pounds there. And you're like, oh, fuck. Like, shit, maybe I didn't. You take the photo down or you block it or you whatever. But imagine you're walking down the street and you post that same photo and somebody says, you're a proper polar bear, Sean. You'd be like, all right, okay, fucking Martin, sound like yeah. you weirdo. Like,
that's my dad's name too.
Yeah, you'd be like, well, yeah, you're like, what the fuck is with that? Like, yeah. Sorry, dad. Like, you know, insert name here though. But you wouldn't think about it. But if you think of the former, where somebody was like, you put on an extra bit of holiday pounds, or, you know, glad you had a good trip, I can see it on your stomach there, or something like that. Because people are fucking cunts sometimes. Like, people do say nasty shit, whether it's passive aggressively or just flat out projecting their stuff onto you. But one bothered you and the other didn't. And I always, that question has always kept me thinking about checking in with the things that land and connect with me. And the story from the book that I use in my personal life was when I was preparing in 2015. So I was a pro fitness model and I was competing in bodybuilding shows. So just traveling around the world doing fitness model shows, photo shoots, etc. And I was preparing for the world in Las Vegas in 2015. And about a month before that show, I was in the dressing room just going through my poses, etc. And one of the lads who came in, who kind of an out of shape 4-year-old guy, came in and was like, Jesus, your legs used to be a lot bigger than that. And I paused and I was like, in my head, I was like, fuck you. I was like, you're out of shape. Like, get the fuck out of here telling me how my legs look. And then he left. And I spent the next 20 minutes staring in the mirror, being like, Jesus, my legs are smaller. What the fuck? Like, I've got a show in a month. I was like, geez, I'm going to be, you know, a laughing stock. I was like, my legs are bigger now. They're way smaller. And in hindsight on that, when I look back on it years later, I didn't have a my legs are small issue. I had a self-worth issue. Like my story and my internal dialogue was, well, if I'm big and muscular, I'll do well in shows. If I do well in shows, I'll be respected. If I'm respected, people will like me. Like this was the internal dialogue that was going on under the surface that I wasn't aware of. So I didn't have an issue with my legs. I had an issue with my self-worth. And that comment landed because all my self-worth was tied into what I call a junk value for me, into the way I looked. I had all my value tied into how I looked. So if I was lean, I felt good. If I was muscular, I felt good. If I was a bit out of shape or a bit fat, body fat was a bit higher, I didn't feel good. I would walk around and I'd wear a hoodie all day, making sure I wasn't in a t-shirt so no one could see I wasn't as lean as I normally am. And then I'd have photos on Instagram. I'm like, Jesus, I was way leaner in those. I was like, if anyone sees me now, like that's exactly how I was walking around. And that was just one of the examples of something that connected with me that wouldn't connect with me now. If somebody walked in and said, geez, your legs are small, or, you know, your arms are small, I'd be like, oh, yeah, maybe they're, they might be. Yeah. Like, you know, I just, it doesn't affect me at all anymore because I've worked through a lot of that body confidence issues that I had, you know, and that still stands to this day. Like, you know, this Sean for putting out stuff on social media and fucking particularly on TikTok, because TikTok's a cesspool, like when it comes to fucking comments. Like, so it you need a little bit of thick skin to even be putting out content on TikTok. Now, thankfully, I'm well over that. You're doing way better than me, because at 21, I would have just been like, no, fuck this. I can't handle this. I wasn't mentally tough enough. But what comes in on social media sometimes can be negative comments, particularly on TikTok, because there's no context. It's coming up on someone's feed and they're like, you know, I get the steroid comments all the time. I'm like, I run 100 mile ultra marathons. I'm like, do you really think I'm taking fucking steroids? Like, but that's the stuff that comes in on TikTok. But that brushes straight off me because I'm like, well, that's not true. Like, it's clearly not true. I know that's not true. So those comments don't hurt me. They don't affect me. They don't land. But every once in a while, somebody will say something else that will connect to me. And I'm like, why did that bother me? You know, and it's important to check in with those things because there's a reason you're reacting to it. Like a good way to think about this is if you get a comment thrown at you, Sean, I get a comment thrown at me, and, you know, Sarah down the street gets a comment thrown at her, identical comments, and we all react in three different ways. It's like, well, it's not the comment that's the problem. It's the bias we're bringing to it and our emotional experience and our issues that have happened that are bringing something up within us. It's like, well, that's your shit. You need to deal with that. And when it comes to people on the outside, the reason I start with us, me, you, reflecting and self-awareness is everybody on the outside does that. They project their shit onto you. Like when I had people tell me, and you know this from the book, Sean, and from conversations we had, like I had people tell me, family members, friends, quote unquote friends, who were like, you are a fucking idiot for leaving a teaching job. What are you doing working in a gym? Like, and I was like, all right, cool. That's cool. You have your opinion. Good for you. You go do your thing. And I used that at times in the beginning when I was trying to build up my business and build up my confidence. I used those comments as fuel for the fire. Like they did help me get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to take a client because I'm like, well, I'll fucking show you and I'll get my business up and running and I'll get it working. So it worked for me. It was fire. But similar to most things, like fire, if you keep the analogy, can heat up your house, but it can also burn it down. So there's a point when that strategy doesn't work, but everybody's going to have an opinion on what you do with your life. Regardless, the fucking people you date, the diets you follow, the people you follow online, the books you read, people are going to have an opinion on fucking everything. So it's not about changing their opinion towards you because they're going to project their insecurities onto you. That's just what people do. You know, I did a podcast on dealing with negative people a couple of years back. And I said that hurt people hurt people. I'm like, if you don't have that hate in you, you're not projecting it out. I very rarely, like, I don't know if you've ever came across it. I'm sure you haven't because I can't think of any instance where I have hateful comments on social media going out to somebody. I don't feel that. Like, if I don't agree with somebody, I'm like, okay, that's their opinion. You know, they have a different experience to me, a different bias. They might be trying to promote a different message. You know, they might have a different way of helping people that I'm unaware of. Cool. You go do you. You go do your thing. I don't project my shit out onto people. And that comes from a lot of work. Now, I didn't do that at any point. That wasn't my way. Like, I would turn it backwards and I would say it to friends. I'd be like, fuck him. Do you see what Johnny did? Or do you see what fucking Sharon did? It's like, Jesus. Like, but it gets to a point when you don't even do that anymore. And the people who are aiming it in your direction, your mom, your dad. Unfortunately, it's parents in some cases. In other cases, it's family members. In other cases, it's friends or people who work in your environment that are saying, well, you can or you can't do something. I'm like, they're just telling you what they can or can't do and they're projecting it onto you. Like, I literally had people, I had a guy message me before I ran through the Arctic, Sean, in 2019. I put this in one of the podcasts. In 2019, when I ran 230 kilometers through the Arctic, and I ran 86 of that with a torn Achilles, put me out for 6 months when I got home. I had a guy message me beforehand and was like, you're going to die in the Arctic. I was like, Jesus, that's a bit fucking morbid. Yeah, I was like, I might. And I was like, well, why do you say that? He goes, you're doing all your training on the treadmill. What are you thinking? And I was like, yeah, fair point. I was like, I hope I don't die. I hope you're wrong. And I was like, what a nasty thing for someone to come out and just be like, you're going to die. And then when I asked him why, he said, well, you're doing all your training on the treadmill. I was like, well, I have to be able to train somewhere. Like, I was like, this is what's working for me. But that's how people are. I didn't know this person. And now I was at the point where I didn't even have to use that for fuel, for fire. I was well motivated to hit that goal at that point. But people are like that, whether they're strangers or people in your family. Like, it's actually easier to deal with strangers because you can just block them or or not reply or ignore it. With family members, it's harder. You have to rewire the way you see a situation. Like, sometimes you can't help if your dad or your mom has been really unsupportive, or if you've got a really negative boss. You have to rewire the way you see the situation, you know, and you disconnect the amount of weight you give their opinion is normally the most important way to do that, because some people you just can't physically remove. With that being said, the people you can physically remove, I would highly, highly recommend you do that. Like, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So make sure you're picking those five people in a very, I won't say selective way, but be mindful that they're impacting you, whether you know it or not. So just have some awareness around who you're spending the majority of your time with, because they will influence the way you think and they will influence the way you act.
Yeah, 100%. And I think people need to get over the delusion that they can please everyone, because you literally can't. It's impossible. See, if you have any opinion, there'll be someone that has an opposite opinion. It doesn't matter how neutral the opinion is. There'll always be someone that disagrees with you. So if you go through your whole life trying to please everyone, you're not going to be true to yourself. So instead, figure out what your values actually are. Stay true to them. And if people disagree with them, take on board what they said. Understand, right, where is that coming from? Is that person saying that because they're jealous? Are they projecting their own insecurities? Do they just have another opinion? Sometimes people might give you feedback that you think is negative, but it actually can be criticism that you think is fair enough, and you can take that on board and use that to change yourself. So there's negative people, but you need to look at where that comment's coming from. And once you understand where the comment's coming from, you can either brush it off, take it on board, or do whatever you want with it. But a lot of the time, these people are going to be telling you that you're going to feel, why are you trying? You're going to feel. And this can build it up in your head. They're all like, oh, that person's telling me I'm going to feel. What if I feel? It's awful. But people have this illusion as well that failure is a bad thing. The most successful people in the world are the people that have failed the most times. Failure isn't something that is bad unless you don't learn from it. A lot of the time, people fail and then they give up. And then obviously, failure is a bad thing. But if you can learn from your failure, the next time you do the same thing, you're going to have more experience to do it and do it better, learn from your mistakes. How do you feel about failure? Should people view failure as a bad thing? Should they view it as something to learn off?
It's the biggest misconception out there that failure is a bad thing. And I had this, like, I definitely had this where if I set a goal or set a target for myself and I didn't hit it, my instant thought would be, oh, you fucking loser. I'm like, that's another thing you didn't do. And you would have this wrapping the word failure with who you are, which is a terrible idea anyway. Or, well, that clearly doesn't work. I'll just give up on it. It normally manifests in one of those two ways. As opposed to being like, you have amazing fucking feedback on what's not working now that you can plug in and change direction next time. Like, every failed relationship, every failed diet, every failed fitness program, every failed business. It took me 3 attempts to get my business off the ground. Like, I went fucking broke, like bank account zero on my second attempt. Like, and only because of the laws of the universe and a couple of lucky situations where a girl in my school was like, can you train me for a wedding and help build up my confidence as a trainer? I probably never would have gone back into personal training. And that's because I had failure with personal training doesn't work. That was my story. I was like, I can't make that work. Doesn't work. And failure is feedback. It's feedback on what doesn't work. I did a very popular podcast in the Brian Keane business podcast, my business podcast, that I spoke about the dumb taxes I paid. And one of them was when I was a personal trainer, I went out and got all the gear. So branded kit, business cards, spent all my money on that, got a gym with no fucking clients. And it was because I wanted to look like I was a personal trainer. And I was telling my friends, and I was in nightclubs in London. I'm like, I'm a personal trainer with fucking zero clients. Like, I was like, yeah, fitness first. Come see me. Come check me out. Didn't work. And that was feedback. When I moved back in 2014 to Ireland to get my business off the ground correctly, I didn't do that same stupid shit. I went into a gym in Galway City. It was a bodybuilding gym at the time, and they were taking PTs for free. So straight away, I'm like, well, that will work. This fucked up last time when I was paying too much rent in the gym. And I didn't get any branded kit. I didn't get any logos. I didn't do any of that stuff. I'm like, well, I need to get clients. So it was feedback on what didn't work. And then I was able to make those changes going forward. And we all have versions of this. Like, what's funny, and like, I'm so lucky now. Like, I've got a partner and she's the most amazing person in the world. But in the lead up in the years before we met, I would go through relationship after relationship after relationship. And every time it would end, I'd always be like, oh yeah, there's something wrong with them. Not realizing that there was a common denominator in all of these relationships that were fucking up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh shit, maybe I'm the fucking problem. Like, it happened, the last one happened, and I'll never forget it. Like, where I literally was seeing a girl for several months and she was in the car and I was dropping her off at her house. I feel so bad. I apologize for this years later. And I dropped her off at her house and I was like, don't want to see you anymore. Good luck.
Classic.
And I closed the door. And the poor fucking girl was just like, because there was no element of this was going to happen, nothing. I was like, oh, I don't want to see her anymore. And I felt like that day. So I'm like, oh, I'm just going to tell her now. And then kicked her out of my car. I messaged her about 18 months after. I'm like, look, I'm really sorry. I'm really embarrassed about how I handled that. But I didn't realize that I was the problem. It was the same things that were coming up within me and the same issues. I was the common denominator. And that failure, when I was able to reflect on all the situations and see that I was making the same mistakes, I was attracting the same type of person, or I was getting to my same upper limit every time. And then I'm like, no, I'm done. Commitment issues. I'm out of here. And once I was able to unpack that and realize that I was the problem and learn from the failure, it led me to, you know, the person I'm with now. And hopefully, you know, everything goes well, that'll be the person I'm with forever. But, you know, things change, life changes. I know that as well. But like, you're always looking at these failures and trying to put out, well, what can I learn from them on the back of it? And I think diets are the same. Every failed diet, like, why did it fail? Most of them come down to, well, they were unsustainable. I couldn't stick to it. Didn't include foods that I enjoyed, or I wasn't in alignment with my goals, or I wasn't able to stick to it because of my schedule. There's feedback on all of those plans and all of those diets that you've done that you can use going forward for the next one. It also allows you to find the right coach. So it might be you, Sean, it might be me, it might be someone else online or offline that you find as a result of some of those past failures, because you've reflected on them. You've thought about the common trends. Well, what happened with all of those six diets that I did that didn't work for me in the long term? And you start to unpack that. And then that failure becomes feedback. It's not an end product. It's not a final thing. It's not even a bad thing. It's feedback when you can see it that way.
Yeah. And I think one of the main things that you touched on there that people need to understand is you need to take full responsibility for every situation that happens to you. It doesn't matter if it wasn't your fault, because the way you need to think about it is, if something happens to you, it's happened. There's nothing that you can do about it. A lot of the time, be like, it's that person's fault. They shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't. I'm so unlucky. But what is that actually doing? It's just, you're telling yourself you're unlucky. You're telling yourself that it isn't your fault. There's nothing you can do about it. But it seems extreme, but no matter what the situation, you need to take full responsibility, because that's the best thing that you can do going forward. And I feel like, in terms of taking full responsibility, so if someone wants to write, I've listened to this podcast, I'm going to start taking full responsibility, no more bullshit, I want to change my life, what advice would you give to someone, be it just general advice, business, health, fitness, a few steps, if they want to start improving their life today and they're ready to commit, what advice would you give to them starting off?
Well, I'll give a very straightforward and simple piece of advice, and then I want to unpack something very interesting that you said there. The advice is, going from 0 to 1 is harder than going from 1 to 10, which means that getting started on any new journey is always the most difficult part. And being aware of that can arm you with the tools you need to succeed on the days it feels difficult. So when you start a new diet or a new training program or anything new, the start is always the hardest, outside of the initial motivation to change. the first 2 weeks, first 3 weeks, first 4 weeks, because it's new. You're going from zero to one. Same with the relationship, same with the business, same with anything. And then as you build momentum and as you build more education around it, and as you start to test things, it becomes considerably easier to stick to. So going from one to two, two to three, two to five, to five to 10 with an end goal, it becomes considerably easier. But going from zero to one is so much harder. Like one of the reasons that I put this, this isn't in Rewire Your Mind, this is in the new book in January. One of the things I struggle with is writing. Someone that's written two books, a third one out in January. I'm not a natural writer. I quite like speaking. I like being on video. I can communicate quite well that way, or so at least I think I can. But writing doesn't come as naturally to me. Now, I enjoy it. I don't necessarily enjoy writing, but I enjoy having written. And when I find inspiration or motivation and a chapter or a section comes to me, I'll stop what I'm doing and I'll capture it in the moment. Because then when I put it onto a Word document, I'm not staring at a blank screen, you know, the blank screen of death that writers have. And I think training and fitness is similar. If you're feeling motivated today, you should start today. You know, if you feel like, do you know what, I'm going to make a change, you shouldn't wait until Monday, the fucking myth of Magic Monday. Wait until Monday. Jesus Christ. Like, you know, what the fuck is so special about Monday? Like, it's, and I get it because we've all done it. Like, you know, I'm like, I'll start on Monday, you know, press the fucker button over the weekend, you know, go into your last supper and clean your house out and then go on a diet on Monday. Like, none of that helps and none of it makes sense in terms of if you're looking at it logically. But, you know, we make nutrition and dietary decisions out of emotion, not necessarily out of logic. So it's just bringing awareness to it. But when it comes to that, going from zero to one is the hardest part. So arming yourself with that. Another thing I want to pull back that you said there, Shane, or Sean, is that, well, it's a tip based on the podcast I did with Shane Welch. When I did Shane's podcast back in, it was 2 or 3 years ago now, and Shane's got one of the top health and fitness podcasts in Ireland at the minute. And I did a podcast with him. I think I've been on it 3 times. And the second time I was on it, the sound quality was really shit. And it was a great interview because Shane is really good at what he does. And I said it to him after. I was like, here, Shane. I was like, that was a great podcast. But when I listened back, I was like, your sound is shit. You need to sort that out. And he could have very easily been like, fuck you. Like, you know, I'll do it to my podcast. I'll do whatever I want with the sound. And he messaged back and he was like, shit, he goes, I need to get that sorted. So with more people, and he did, he got it sorted and then was able to bring on more people. And he told me on the third episode, then he was like, that really hurt at the time. He was like, cause you're someone I respected. And he was like, he goes, I knew you were right. And I was like, I was only trying to help. I was like, that advice was coming from a place of, I want you to succeed. Like, I think you're fucking sound. We're really good friends. I was like, I want you to do well. Here's something that will help you. So when you're getting advice from somebody, me, you, somebody else online, offline, friends, family members, it's important where the other person is coming from. Like, you can remove probably 80 or 90% of the advice given to you by asking, would you switch positions with the person offering it? Like, in a lot of cases, you wouldn't. Jesus, Sean, if I had a fucking euro for every time I would hear someone saying, oh, well, you know, my friend Karen's been on the Special K diet and she lost a load of weight, you know, and I'm like, Karen's 60 pounds overweight.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Why the fuck are you taking diet advice from Karen?
Yeah.
Like, you know, but you know, it eliminates a lot of where the advice is coming from. And I wanted to add that because getting started is hard enough anyway, because you're trying to make a change and do something that's not routine, do something that you're not currently doing. So that in and of itself is a great thing for people, but it's difficult in the beginning. So knowing that and bringing awareness to that is important. But when you start a new journey, to tie back what we mentioned earlier, before you've built the confidence and seen the physical changes in what you're doing, your self-doubt is higher. Anyone that's ever signed up to a fitness program or a coach who has gone in blindly, not necessarily with your content or my content, because we put out a lot of content, people kind of know what they're getting when they work with us. Mm-hmm. But for those where you bought into a program or bought into something that you don't know that much about, you're not fully confident in the process yet because you haven't seen the results, but then you start to see some weight drop or some clothes feeling looser and you're like, okay, this is working. I'm building confidence with this. At the beginning of a new journey, people are going to offer a lot of opinions on what you're doing because they know it's new to you. And if you don't arm yourself with, I'm doing this regardless of the opinion that comes in here, it's very easy for someone to knock you off track before you've even started. So I think when you're starting something new, you need to be very guarded on where your information is coming from, either physically or virtually in the digital world for podcasts and Instagram, etc. Like, my rule of thumb, particularly for my beginners and those who are like overweight or obese, I normally say, well, you can follow three people online. I was like, I get to be one of them because you're working on my program, and two more. I was like, two people. I was like, that's it. For the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you consume three people online. I was like, and you can tell me what you found on theirs that you want to maybe try, and we'll adapt it. But don't be following 20 people. Don't be asking everybody about what you're doing, because they'll all offer an opinion. You know, the old adage, opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one. Like, that's exactly what it is. People will offer an opinion regardless of whether they're the right person to or not. It's mental. I had fucking hell, Sean. I remember when I moved back several years ago after the first book came out, The Fitness Mindset. So that book came out in 2017, did way better than I ever expected. So that book was 16 weeks on the Amazon bestseller list and just exceeded any expectations that I ever had beforehand. And I remember a family member telling me about investing in like a, do you know those kind of the kids areas, the indoor kids areas where kids play? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the big massive ones that have all the indoor swings, they're like indoor playgrounds. And she was like, you should invest in one of those. And I was like, okay. I was like, go on. I was like, why should I invest in one of those? She was like, well, you know, you have money. I was like, yeah, I intend to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. I was like, why should I invest in those? She goes, well, they're definitely a massive moneymaker. And I was like, one, you've worked in an office your entire life for the last 40 years. And for the last 34 years, as long as I've known you, you've worked in an office your whole life. Two, they're not fucking money makers. They're with insurance and everything. They're absolute drains. Yeah. But if I was at the start of a journey, I might've been like, Jesus, maybe I will do that. Maybe I will invest, or maybe I will start one of those companies, you know? And I had been doing it for so long at that point where I'm like, this advice is ludicrous. I'm like, this, not only is this bad advice, it's coming from someone who hasn't a fucking clue what they're talking about. And this is the same person who I love and respect in other areas. But I'm like, don't come at me with business advice. Like, you know, it's not your area. You've worked in an office for, you know, 40 years, 34 of them where I've been alive. Like, so it's funny, but that's how people are. And I think that indicates, regardless of what you're trying to do, that's how you're going to have your version of this happen. You're going to have aunties, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, moms, dads, friends, colleagues who will offer opinions and tell you can or can't do something. You need to block that out in the beginning. You know, if you're clear on what you're looking to achieve, whatever your goal is, be it relationship, business, fitness, and you've got your coach or your program or your plan, or you're even doing it yourself, you need to guard against all those things in the beginning. I think if I had known that advice and had that advice at the start of my journey, I probably would have got my personal training business up and running faster. But I was taking, I won't say bad advice, unsolicited advice is probably better, because I didn't have the knowledge at the time to know if it was bad advice. Because if I knew it was bad advice, I wouldn't take it. Mm-hmm. It was unsolicited and unproven, in the sense that it wasn't someone I would change positions with, or I was taking advice from everybody. Like, that's what we tend to do, isn't it? Like, mm-hmm. when we're unsure, we ask fucking everybody, like, you know, for their opinion. Like, that's, we all do it by default. But that's not how you seek out advice. You seek out who's the best person to help me in this situation. And then you go and follow them, or do their program or their course, or read their book, or listen to their podcast, or meet them for coffee or lunch or whatever it is, you know, if it's someone in your physical world or the digital world. I think that's important. So I think before you do anything and make any change, you have to kind of guard your environment. Like, as I said, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, but that doesn't mean that those ideas that come in from other people don't influence you as well. Just make sure they're influencing you in a positive way.
Yeah. I think that the main thing there is for people to understand, like, just start. Don't try and be absolutely perfect. Stop thinking about it so much and start. When you do start and you're getting people's opinions, instead of saying, oh, all negative opinions are bad, all good ones are good, think about where that opinion's coming from. Does that person have the credentials to give you their opinion? Should you take it on board or should you not? I feel like in this podcast, Bram, we could have talked for potentially hours. There's so much more questions that I could ask, but I want to ask you a couple of quick fire ones here, literally just two. And the first one is just, what's next for you? What's next for Bram King? You just said you had a new book coming in January. You seem like I feel like a lot of the time people get the stage and then they just want to stop, but you seem like the person that wants to keep going, wants to keep doing.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate, because I said it at the top of the podcast, it is such a cliche, but when you don't feel like you're working, when you love what you do, it doesn't feel like you're working. And that's mental. How I feel. That's it's exactly mental. How I
it's
feel.
Crazy. Yeah.
And from the outside, it looks like I'm doing a lot. And I suppose objectively, probably I am, but none of it feels like work. Like, you know, I love recording podcasts. I love conversations like this. I love writing books, that having written, because writing can be a bit of a struggle, but I love when they're written and I always get very clear on my thoughts. And the new book, The Keen Edge, Mastering Your Mindset for Fat Loss, is out in January. And that'll be the next big push for sure, because that is probably a culmination of anyone that's followed me for the last 18 months, 2 years, because I've been very consistent with my message for nutrition and my philosophy and the mindset element and self-sabotage and resetting, excuse me, and understanding that nutrition is about finding the plan that works for you and adopting and testing things. And this new book is for that. It's very much specific to that. So come the new year, from a business standpoint, that'll be the next big push. But as I said, like, I'm always doing new things, making new courses, writing books. Like, I love what I do. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a time when I didn't love what I do, so I'm very grateful for it now. I have that contrast point. But January will be the next big push. I'll be doing a lot of stuff in January for promotion for that. And hopefully it helps people as much as the first two books. Like, it's probably more specific to the nutrition element, mm-hmm. because a lot of people who follow me, particularly on my platform, struggle with nutrition. They struggle with mindset. They struggle with dieting. And I wanted to have a resource that not necessarily is the coaching, because my coaching runs sporadically through the year based on my schedule, that is just an evergreen resource for people and hopefully helps them as much as the first two books. But we'll see, you know, I'll know in a year's time. We're chatting in November next year. I'll be like, yeah, book did great or book didn't do great. And it did help or it didn't help. But the goal is always to have impact with them. Like, you know, no one becomes a millionaire writing books. Like, you literally need to sell a couple of million copies to do really well financially with books. But I love what I get back from people on them, and they're about impact. So as long as I'm writing them and they're having that impact and I'm getting those positive messages back from people, from you, from others, like, I'll continue to write them as long as I have something new to say. So yeah, that'll be exciting coming the next few months.
Yeah. I love that. And I love books, because a lot of the time when you read people's books, you're getting all of their experience in life put into one thing. If you read a few books, you've got a few different people's life experiences. So definitely would recommend anyone reading Brand's books. They're absolutely amazing. Lastly, where can people find you if people want to know more about what you do or your podcast, your books, etc.?
Amazing. Thanks, Sean. So yeah, so the Brian Keane podcast, probably the best one for those that are listening to a podcast. Check that out. Instagram, Brian Keane. Brian_Keane_fitness. It depends how, like, people like to consume content. I normally say audio, check out the podcast. If you like visual stuff, check out Instagram or YouTube or Facebook. If you like written, check out the books or the newsletter on the website, BrianKeaneFitness.com. It really just depends on how people like to consume their information.
Perfect, Brian. Thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure was all mine. Thanks so much again.